It was a bitter February some years ago when I slipped into this world minutes after midnight. I was meant to arrive the day before, but I clung to my comfort zone, my warm, floating orb, for just a little longer. The stars blinked in the cold winter sky as my father murmured the Muslim call to prayer in my ear and my mother poured milk into my veins. Now, as a grown woman, I am yet to become a mother myself. But motherhood still connects to me like an umbilical cord. There's an intimacy and beyondness that intrigues me. I'm awed by this unique human experience, yet also see the mother as a symbol that transcends, a sacred energy that empowers, even a force that at times feels threatening. I want to understand how the power of the mother has been eclipsed by patriarchy, and why recalling the lessons of a long herstory not only claims a rightful place of respect for mothers, but also recognizes maternal strength as a source of inspiration. Ultimately, I want to understand if there is a universal mother, and more personally, if there is a mother in me. When I think back to the first mother figure I was most drawn towards, after my own, of course, I can think of only one woman, the Blessed Virgin Mary. As a young Muslim girl, I knew and loved the story of the Muslim Mary, but was also captivated by images and figures of the Christian Mary whenever I stepped inside a church. I once gazed up at a serene, veiled statue, the carved folds of her dress drooping in humility around her. Despite the statue's stillness, at any moment I expected she would step down from the plinth and enfold me in her marble arms. The legendary Lebanese Christian singer Fairuz sings an intimate address to Mary, or Maryam in her Arabic tongue. Ya Maryam al-Bikr, O Virgin Mary, she sings, beyond the sun and the moon, O Mother of Jesus, my mother and my hope. Fairuz claims to sing as if she were praying. I imagine her hands clasped as she sings her sacred hymn. The love, it yearns and stirs my own love for Mary, who is described in the Quran as being above all the women of all the worlds. Mary's spiritual devotion singles her out, yet I feel most connected to her when she's at her weakest moment. In Islamic tradition, Mary is alone when giving birth to Jesus, and when the pangs of labour drive her to cling to the trunk of a palm tree, she cries out,
I wish I had been dead and forgotten long before all this!
I think many mothers might recognise this sentiment. I find it such a tribute how the Quran lays out Mary's anguish in her own voice during labour. I glimpse the birth experience through the poetry of Medina Tenor Whiteman, an Anglo-American Muslim writer and poet, and mother of three, who performs her poem, Before She Outgrows Your Arms, especially for this programme.
Birth takes you deep, beneath humus into an earth alive and elemental. The quiet of a forest, patient burden of an ant, an acorn growing anonymously underground. Amazons with gritted teeth, a lioness predating, crash of whale's tail on sea, fearsome swell of tsunami. Then, tenderness in torrents. Bliss of being more than one, cheeks glistening with thanks for briefly being someone's world, before she outgrows your arms, drifts off across the waters and forms her own island. For now, she is a peninsula of you.
I love this idea, as Medina says, of islands and peninsulas being as mother and child. It nods to the notion of motherland, a maternal earth that gives of herself to raise her children, her people. I remember as a child watching the old Indian film classic, Mother India. The film released in 1957, 10 years after independence, and centred around a poverty-stricken, self-sacrificing mother, Radha, who, in her husband's absence, is left with her children to survive the bitter cruelties of life. The film's title was intentional. Radha symbolised India itself, emerging in the years after partition. She, like the land, suffered. She, like the land, prevailed. Gayatri Chatterjee, author of the book Mother India, writes,
Radha is continuity personified, stable and patient like Mother Earth. Such a protagonist must live long and experience several births and deaths, several rotations of joy and sorrow. The female earth remains grounded, no matter how cruelly she is visited, by rain or fire.
Chatterjee observed the emotional patriotism of the nation as mother. Mother India. It's the place I guess people mean when I've been told, go back to where you came from. My parents were born there, but my mother gave birth to me here. Doesn't that make Britain my motherland? Mother Britain, Mother India, it's been a constant wrestling of identity, being of here and there and nowhere at the same time. I'm clutching to the cord of belonging, feeling a tension in the string. It's a tension I recognise in the words of American singer-songwriter Natalie Merchant. In her song Motherland, she sings, "Don't miss this wasteland, this terrible place when you leave." But Merchant then beseeches, Motherland, cradle me, lullaby me to sleep. Keep me safe, don't go.
Where in hell can you go? Far from the things that you know. Far from the sprawl of concrete that keeps crawling its way. About 1,000 miles a day. Take one last look behind. Commit this to memory and mind. Don't miss this wasteland, this terrible place when you leave. Keep your heart off your sleeve.
The motherland is cruel and comforting, safe and threatening all at once. It's a turmoil played out in the figure of Medea, the powerful sorceress in Greek mythology, whose conflicting role of mother and betrayed wife proves to be tragic for all. Medea goes to extreme lengths to be with Jason, her Greek hero. She betrays her father to help Jason steal the Golden Fleece and even kills her own brother to aid their escape. Now, far from her own motherland of Asia Minor, Medea becomes a mother herself to two sons, but Jason betrays her by marrying another. Medea unleashes her fury, murdering the bride, the bride's father, and most disturbingly of all, her own sons. When I first studied the Greek play Medea by Euripides, I remember feeling mortified yet sympathetic towards her. Medea is torn over killing her children. There's a psychological and emotional battle with herself. Here she delivers a final chilling speech before taking her own children's lives.
My friends, I have determined to do the deed at once. To kill my children and leave this land, and not to falter or give my children over to let a hand more hostile murder them. They must die, and since they must, I, who brought them into the world, will kill them. But arm yourself, my heart. Why hesitate to do these tragic yet necessary evils? Come, unhappy hand of mine, take the sword, take it. Move to the dismal turning point of life. Do not be a coward. Do not think of your children. How much you love them. How you gave them birth. For this one short day, forget your children and mourn tomorrow. For even if you kill them, still you loved them very much. I am an unhappy woman.
Medea wants to cripple Jason and make him suffer by destroying what they both love the most. It sends shivers crawling down my spine to think that Medea is both mother and executioner. Jason says there should have been some other means for mankind to reproduce itself without the need of female sex. This would rid the world of all its troubles. Jason's words are a reminder of the ancient Greek attitude towards Pandora, the first woman ever created. The tale of Pandora's box lay in the pages of my childhood fairy tale books, but I only realised later that it wasn't a box at all, but a jar shaped like a womb. Professor Robert Marr remarks on the story.
The substitution of box for jar is attributed to the 16th century monk Erasmus, who mistranslated the original Greek, pithos, with Latin, pixis. Womb-like in shape, it is also a symbol for the earth, the mother of all. Pandora's gifts are released not from some box she holds, but from her own womb. Her fault lies not in her curiosity, but in her being. She is constitutionally deceptive, and essentially lethal, for when she opens the lid of the pithos and gives birth, she brings death as well.
Lovely. It's been argued that the story of Pandora influenced interpretations of biblical scripture relating to Eve and shaped unfavourable attitudes towards women in society. But women have been long rejecting and reclaiming this narrative, even pointing to the mother as a sacred source of origin. I once spoke on a panel that posed the question, what if God was a woman? I reckon Julian of Norwich, a Christian mystic born in the 14th century, would have had some interesting answers. Julian was something of a medieval trailblazer, author of the first book in the English language known to be written by a woman. In her Revelations of Divine Love, or Showings, she alludes, quite matter of fact, to the maternal Godhead. For her, beginning in the name of the mother may have sat as comfortably as beginning in the name of the father.
Jesus Christ, therefore, who himself overcame evil with good, is our true mother. We received our being from him, and this is where his maternity starts. And with it comes the gentle protection and guard of love, which will never cease to surround us. It is thus logical that God, being our Father, be also our Mother.
Some centuries later, in 2017, artist Harmonia Rosales pushed the concept of the Heavenly Mother even further, when she reimagined Michelangelo's painting, The Creation of Adam, with both God and the first man depicted as black women. The Afro-Cuban artist said in an interview with The Guardian that she wanted to counter the image of white men in power. She made God a woman in the painting because it just made sense, and she added, "We all come from the womb." This sentiment whispers recognition to my understanding of the divine. I, along with a billion others, repeat two names of Allah that refer to motherhood every day. Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim, the most merciful, the most compassionate. Both these names of God are rooted in the word for womb, Rahm. While in the Islamic tradition, God is beyond gender, being neither male or female, the analogy of Allah to a mother is more familiar to me than Allah to a father. To capture the love and mercy of God, Prophet Muhammad uses a maternal paradigm.
Allah is more merciful to his servants than a mother to her child.
There is something deeply unique and even scientific about a mother's instinct. Brain researcher Elseline Hoxima led a neurological study and discovered the brain's architecture can rewire itself during pregnancy and remain this way for up to 2 years after birth.
We found that the brain areas that change during pregnancy coincide in part with those areas in a woman's brain that exhibit the strongest response to her child in the period after the birth. The observed brain changes might serve an adaptive purpose for imminent motherhood. Changes in these social brain areas could, for example, confer an advantage for the mother by strengthening her ability to read the needs of her infant.
So, mummy brain really is a thing. The emotional changes and neurological shifts help explain why mothers become so fiercely protective over their child. This drive to protect the baby first came home to me through the prism of a children's cartoon.
Baby mine, don't you cry.
Dumbo is the adorable big-eared baby elephant, whose gentle mother loves him so vigilantly that she smacks a bully and is promptly locked up. Even while in chains, Dumbo's mother comforts her baby, gently swinging him on her trunk through the bars of her cage to this song. The relationship between mother and baby elephant is described as the closest of any non-human animal on Earth. What I find intriguing is that once the newborn calf arrives, the females in the herd help to raise the baby. This act has a special term, allomothering. I see the allomother in so many women around me, single women who raise and nurture children not their own. They even nurture their friends, their brothers, their sisters. It's what I find so touching in the film, In Her Shoes. Despite a torrid relationship, the responsible older sister, Rose, cannot help being a protective allomother to her wild, unstable younger sister, Maggie. Their sisterhood eventually finds its anchor in the words of a poem by E.E. Cummings, which Maggie, overcoming her dyslexia, reads out to Rose as a gift on her wedding day. It's a poem that I wrote out as a keepsake for my own sister after she became a mother for the first time. It was to signify the bond between us and the bond that forever tied her to her baby daughter, who left this world too soon. Whenever I remember the poet's words now, I can almost taste the bitter sweetness of the love between our three hearts.
I carry your heart with me. I carry it in my heart. I'm never without it. Anywhere I go, you go, my dear, and whatever is done by only me is your doing, my darling. I fear no fate, for you are my fate, my sweet. I want no world, for beautiful you are my world, my true. And it's you, or whatever a moon has always meant, and whatever a sun will always sing, is you. Here is the deepest secret nobody knows. Here is the root of the root, and the bud of the bud, and the sky of the sky of a tree called life, which grows higher than soul can hope or mind can hide. And this is the wonder that's keeping the stars apart. I carry your heart. I carry it in my heart.
I know, more keenly now than I ever did, how motherhood has its sweet joys and its salty tears. While there is such beauty and bliss in every new life that joins our throng, motherhood is also about enduring the tragedy of loss. In Islam, bereaved mothers are made a promise that they will be reunited with their child. As Prophet Muhammad declared,
"By the one in whose hand is my soul, the miscarried fetus will pull his mother by its umbilical cord to paradise."
This saying, this pledge, feels so urgently responsive to a mother's grief and so powerfully assured. There are a number of sayings that confirm and reconfirm her status. "Paradise lies at the feet of your mother" is perhaps the most known and loved. I find it beautiful, but it also holds a subtle sting. As I'm not a mother myself, how would I ever be included in that promise? But again, the Prophet's words bring me comfort, and even more than that, they give me honour. The Prophet said, "Al-khalatu bimanzilatil ummu," the aunt has the position of the mother. I couldn't help my eyes leaking happy tears at this, feeling as I do like a second mum to my nieces and nephew, who I often regard as my own. But there truly is no one like a mother, as this Islamic narration points out.
A person came to the Messenger of Allah and asked, "Who among people is most deserving of bestowing my honour upon?" The Prophet said, "Your mother." He asked, "Who next?" "Your mother," the Prophet replied. "Who next?" The Prophet said again, "Your mother." He again asked, "Then who?" Thereupon the Prophet said, "Then your father."
Growing up in the West, I've sometimes witnessed dismissive attitudes towards mothers. I once heard someone ask a full-time mum, "What do you do?" "I'm a mother," came the reply. "Okay, so you don't do anything." It baffled and irritated me. I believe being a mother is the ultimate human experience. It's a physical, emotional, and spiritual achievement that captures the miracle and mystery of human development. True equality is not about making a mother do something else, or even do it all to gain respect. The reverence for them should be implicit. From mortal mother to sacred mother, I find Shakti in the Hindu tradition deeply fascinating. She is the archetypal cosmic energy, the great divine mother who destroys evil and restores balance, and is worshipped by millions who call on her for strength, fertility, and power. Shakti is a force that celebrates matriarchal majesty, and yet I still wonder at the persistence of misogynistic attitudes. I reflect again on all these representations of motherhood and know they form part of the vast, complex and mysterious feminine maternal essence as the great mother, the nation mother, the sacred mother, the human mother. I believe ultimately the mother is a unifying and creative energy. If her status is raised as it should be, we can raise ourselves up to a more compassionate and respectful world. Motherhood is powerful and palpable when we go beyond simplistic understandings and recognize that the mother lies in our own selves, that the mother lies in me.